Welcome to the podcast of Grace Covenant Church, where we are transformed by God's grace, connected through relationships, and committed to service.
This truth is just killing me. Started out just hurting when I bit down, but now, now it just hurts all the time. All the time. It's a good thing there's not much to eat around here, because I don't think I could chew it. Just to keep sucking on all that coconut and all that crayon. You did think I used to avoid going to the dentist like a plague. I put it off every single chance I got. And now, what I wouldn't give to have a dentist right here in this cave. In fact, I wish you were a dentist.
Okay, first of all, you're welcome. You know, our intro videos are usually, we try to get them under 90 seconds, and I think that one's about 72. And that was, I think, the longest 72 seconds we've ever had up here. Ow. So why does someone take out a broken cavity, infected tooth with a rock and an ice skate? Because it is less painful to knock a tooth out with a rock and an ice skate than it is to keep a tooth in. If Tom Hanks doesn't knock that tooth out and get knocked out, he'll die. I mean, that's just all there is to that. And so he has to make a decision whether he's going to live with a whole lot of temporary pain or just not live at all. There's a theme there somewhere. Pain with a purpose. It's pretty graphic, though, isn't it? But that's the way a lot of life is, too. And I want you guys to turn with me into John chapter 15, and I want you to see a passage of great importance. This is one of the most important passages in the entire book of John. You know, when Jesus, in the ministry, in the life, and certainly the teachings of Jesus the Christ, he has said consistently that the only way to live this life is to be completely all in, to follow him absolutely, without hesitation. Because he says it's the only way that's actually true. It's the only way that makes sense. It's the only way that works. It's the only way that you won't regret living later. So he's saying this continually, all in, throughout his ministry. And now we're kind of changed gears as of last week. We're the upper room discourse. He's just talking to his 12, and then Judas is left, and now we're at 11. And he's involving himself in the most intimate conversation of great importance to you and I that he'll ever have with anyone in John chapter 15. And it's very important for us to understand that Jesus has now finished his meal. And he understands that the hourglass is soon to be empty in his life. And so he takes his men, these 11 men, his true and most faithful followers, and he takes them outside and down the stairway into a cold evening. And he's going to the Garden of Gethsemane, the Mount of Olives. It's just kind of right across the ravine. And on his way there, he walks by an ancient vineyard. They were found throughout Jerusalem. And he stops, and in that evening night, with just the torchlight, he stops and says to his men, the last time he says the great I am, he says, I am the true vine. I am the true vine. And my Father, he's the gardener. He's the vine dresser. That's the context of what Jesus is saying here in John chapter 15. And really what he's saying here, and it's so important for the guys, he just kind of pulls these guys all understand exactly what's happening here because they understand how to work a vineyard. But he's saying, guys, this is how the soul works. This is how my Father will work in the life of every believer. I'm trying to take the mystery out of what might happen to you or what will certainly happen to you in the future. I don't want you to be surprised. I mean, in other words, right, in college speak, this is on the test. This material will be on the test called life. If you're a follower of mine, then this will be on the test. So please listen. I'll use metaphors and illustrations and props to make sure that you remember this, because you need to communicate this to as many people as possible. John chapter 15, verse 1 says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener or vine dresser. He cuts off or lifts up every branch in me that bears no fruit. And while every branch that does bear fruit, those branches he prunes so that they'll be even more fruitful. Now, you've already been cleaned because of the words which I have spoken to you. Now, remain in me, and I will remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain on the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. Next paragraph, verse 5, says the same. I am the vine, you are the branches. If a man remains in me and I in him, they will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not remain in me, he is like a branch that's been thrown away or withered, and these branches are all picked up and they're thrown into a fire and they're burned. But if you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish and it'll be given to you. This is my Father to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. This is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit and show yourselves to be my followers. Okay, so there's the story. There's how it works out. These are the truths that are so simple for these men to hear because it was delivered in such an effective and memorable way. But you and I, we don't grow vines. We're not in the winemaking business. And so we're going to have to spend a little bit more time on this than they probably had to. And so I'm just going to give you some basics of grape growing, okay? The first one in this passage is Jesus is the true vine. Okay, there's a lot of deeper meaning to that. He's distinguishing himself from Israel itself, always kind of being illustrated as a vine. And Jesus says, I'm the true vine. All those things about Israel were all pointing to me. And then he says, and so it kind of, let's go back to the vine part. Okay, a vine, it makes it sound like it's just these running little strands. But a vine, when it comes in the context of a vineyard, is about a waist-high stalk. It's more of a trunk, and it'll come up about that big around, and it'll come up and then split off to make a T going both two different directions. Okay, that's what it means when Jesus says, I'm the vine. It's a waist high, kind of a mild trunk that's spread out. Then he says that the Father is the vine dresser or the gardener, and that means he's going to do whatever is necessary to produce as much fruit as possible. That's what he does. That's his ambition for this vineyard. And then it says that you and I, we're the branches. Now, when this trunk goes up and out to each side, what's going to happen is they're going to stake these things, these trunks, these vines. They're going to stake these trunks at various distances apart. And then they're going to tie them together with strands. And then they're going to put a bunch of strings, maybe four or five strings from the top to, near the bottom, maybe a foot off the ground. And it'll almost look like a music sheet going across, with these bars going across, but the bars are strings, and these branches are just kind of woven into that. And the reason they do that is to keep the branches off the ground. Because if the branches are off the ground, they'll be well ventilated, they'll get a lot of air, the sun will be beating down on more of them, and they'll be easy to work. They'll be easy to manage from, the vine grower there. Okay? So that's what's going on here. But what does the passage say the goal is? It says it like four times. It says the goal is there's to be fruit. And then later on, it says that in verse 2. And then in 2b, it says there's supposed to be more fruit. And then in verse 5 and 8, it said there should be much fruit. Okay? So I want us to just remember that outline. What's the goal? We'll say fruit, more fruit, much fruit. Let's do that. What's the goal? Fruit, more fruit, much fruit. Okay? And why is that? Because it said in verse 8, the kind of the summary of this particular part of the passage, it says, this is my Father's to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. So we're supposed to be a little bit greedy about the fruit, apparently, because, just fruit, much fruit, more fruit. Okay? We're supposed to be always wanting more fruit. That's what the vine grower, that's what the gardener is after. As much possible fruit that can be accumulated through these, not just the vine, because that's Jesus, but through the branches. Okay, so what's the fruit? That'd be a pretty simple question. Well, just to put it succinctly, this is in Galatians. These are the fruits of the Spirit, that love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Now, if you go back a couple slides where we had those grapes up before and it said fruit, more fruit, much fruit, why be so greedy about the fruit? Well, I mean, look at that list. Would you like more patience? Yeah. Would you like much joy, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control? Sure. So if you look at that as an example of what the fruit of the Spirit are, then you'd say, sure, I want fruit. I want more fruit. I want much fruit. And then you'd be tracking along with the Father. Okay? Now you get what the vineyard is up to. You know, the vine dresser is up to. He wants you to have this. He wants you to have a lot of this. And we are created, by the way, we are created for this. This is what our soul longs for. This is what our nature, our spiritual nature, that thing that calls out to eternity that's deep inside of us. This is what we're to do. And when we're not doing this, we're probably unfulfilled in our distractions and attempts to do anything less than these things. Okay, it is the fruit of the Spirit is like Jesus is breaking out from the inside of us to the outside of us. We are doing things that we could never imagine because we're overwhelmed with love towards other people that we don't even like. And we have a gentleness and a courage both at the same time. Okay, so that's what God is up to produce fruit, more fruit, much fruit in each one of us. So how does he do that? According to this passage, what does God do? What does the vine dresser do when he's working with the true vine to help you and I, the branches, produce fruit, more fruit, much fruit? Well, the first thing it says in the passage in John, it says he lifts them up, and that's a way of saying discipline. Look on the screens here, it says the slide, it says, and Jesus said, every branch in me, okay, it's in me, they're followers, that does not bear fruit, he takes away. Some translations, better translations, I'd say, says lifts up and washes. He lifts up. He washes them. So the idea here is that some of these, again, because the stalk and this the vine is like this, the branches tend, a lot of times the branches get stuck in close to the ground, especially those that aren't tied to that first terrace. And what happens is the leaves get covered with dirt, and then they can't breathe. They can't be exposed to the sun. And when it rains, they get all muddy. And so what does the vine dresser do? He comes out to that garden, and he grabs that particular branch that has no potential in producing any fruit, and cleans it off, and then stretches it out, and then ties it to that first string, that bottom string. Now, in the Bible, that would be called discipline. And what this passage is referring to, most likely, is when people are doing things that are wrong. It's when we are opposing what God's best is for our life. And so God's going to discipline us in some manner. And if you look tenderly at Hebrews chapter 12, I'll put most of it on the screen here, but if you'll just make reference to Hebrews 12, because it's a wonderful passage that talks about how God disciplines us. What does it mean to be disciplined when he wants us to stop doing wrong? These are like Ten Commandments sorts of things. lying and cheating and disrespect for our parents, that sort of issues. So in verse 12 of chapter, or verse 7 of chapter 12 of Hebrews, he says, he's talking about discipline, lifting these branches up that don't produce any fruit. Endure hardship as discipline. Endure hardship as discipline. It's for a purpose. For God is treating you as sons. For what son does not get disciplined by his father? If you're not disciplined, anyone, because everyone goes through discipline, okay, then you're not a legitimate child. You're not a true son. So the first part, verse 7 and 8 of Hebrews chapter 12, says that, listen, you need to endure spankings, discipline, because it proves that you're his child. If you're a follower of Christ and are doing something wrong continually, repetitively, premeditatively, and you're not disciplined by God, I think this passage is trying to tell you that you're not one of his children. Because it says every son, every child is disciplined by their parent. And if you're not disciplined by this parent, then you're not his child. So 7 and 8 says, look, when you endure these kind of forms of discipline, because you're not producing any fruit, because you're doing something wrong, look at it as an encouraging thing. For one thing, it says, hey, I know I belong to the king. How do you know? Because I'm getting pounded. So anyway, the passage goes on and says, verse 11, it says, and 12, it says, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but it's painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. He's talking about fruit again. The purpose of discipline is to produce fruit. More fruit. Much fruit. And so sometimes God has to do whatever God has to do to people so that they'll learn from this. In the verses that precede this, it serves as a great outline for us to see how God disciplines. How does he actually do it? Look carefully at 5 and 6. Have you forgotten the word of encouragement? I want you to be encouraged by your spankings, it says, that addresses you as sons. My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline. And do not lose heart when he, quote, rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes everyone who he accepts as a son. So in just those couple verses there, it gives us an outline of how God disciplines those who are true followers of him and how he tries to kind of lift them up and clean them off and tie them to one of these strings so that they would produce fruit, more fruit, much fruit. The first thing it says, look what it says he rebukes you. And that's when you say to your own children, you know, or as a child, you heard this too. When the parent says, hey, kids, listen, you need to quit playing so rough. You're going to hurt yourself or you're going to hurt someone else. A rebuke is a word of warning. And we get words of warning when we read our Bibles and it kind of dings us in a special way. Our conscience kind of is pricked and kind of tells us we can hear. Maybe even the Spirit of God telling us, hey, you know what? This can't go on much longer. You might hear something in a sermon. But God is very gracious. And if you're listening to his warnings, you can end it right there. Discipline's over. But if you look at the passage, it says, but if that doesn't work, it says, because the Lord disciplines those he loves. Now, the word discipline there is translated in other passages, meaning chastise. And so now the consequences are going up a bit. And in our little metaphor with our roughhousing kids, it would be, okay, kids, I'm going to have to put you in time out. I'm going to have to isolate you from each other. Now you can't have the fun you were having before or the potential that you could have had. And I'm going to have to put you in some other place where you can't hurt yourself or you can't hurt other people. So there's a consequence. And it's to bring you back to fruit bearing, right? To stop you from sinning. In some of our situations, it can feel like we're out of touch with like fellowship with one another. You know, it's not clicking like it used to. We can feel even that way towards our relationship with God. He doesn't hear like he used to, or he doesn't respond like he did. We can't hear his voice because he's tired of talking to ears that won't listen. Sometimes in church, you know, it's just like you've been removed from a particular ministry of influence because your influence is not a good influence. And so maybe you'll be moved to a ministry of service where you can still serve, but you're not roughhousing anymore. You're not hurting yourself and you're not hurting other people with your words or your actions. See? And so that's God's way of saying, please respond to that. So there's these warnings, there's the rebukes, there's discipline, and then look at the last one. It says, he punishes everyone he accepts as sons. Now, that's the spanking part. One translation calls it scourging. Ow! So all of these disciplines are painful, aren't they? Absolutely. But the pain shows that we belong to him. And the punishment phase here is when you're actually, that's when you get the spoon out. That's when you're trying to, especially with a little child, you're trying to associate, you know, this conduct with pain. We want to connect those two. Because if you don't stop here and now, the consequence is going to get so dreadful, it could hurt you seriously. It kind of pain with a purpose. If Tom Hanks doesn't knock that tooth out with a rock and a skate, he'll die. And so when the spoon gets taken out, it's because not only have we ignored the warnings and the little consequences, we're starting to really put a threat to the things that make other people well and ourselves happy in our relationship with God. And so he has to step in sometimes. And so sometimes it's a logical consequence or natural consequence for not letting go of things. Like stealing, you know. Let's just do Ten Commandments kind of thing. There's a high price for that. And it could be jail. For coveting, for worrying all the time, for, you know, there's so many passages about bitterness, the toll on your physical body for holding on to bitterness. It will wreck you. If you don't listen to the first two warnings, then the spanking could be serious illness. Sometimes in the church context, it means that we actually have to ask you to leave the church because we have to protect the rest of the flock from someone that now we don't even know is a believer, and you're just... You're just a wolf running around amongst the sheep. And so that's what that discipline looks like. So let me just, in review, let me just kind of give you some overviews of this discipline part. This first part is that the source of discipline is God. It's to all believers get disciplined because we're all his children. That it's always out of love. And finally, remember, it said so that it would be a harvest of righteousness. There'd be a harvest of righteousness. Now listen, I mean, again, we're back to the vineyard. Jesus wants us to remember this because here's the deal. It is up to you and I to stop the punishment phase. Okay? It could stop with the rebuke. Oh, I get it. I have this listening ear. You don't have to ding me twice on this. It is so much easier to obey, you know? It's faster. It's cheaper. I don't know how you, whatever your values are, Jesus will beat you on this one. And he's just saying, come on. You know, if you're laying down there in the dirt, you'll never produce any grapes, and I'll do whatever I have to do. I will. Don't challenge my love. You know, I'm pretty committed to grapes, very committed to grapes in your life. Okay? So the vine maker, the gardener, he wants love. He wants more love. He wants much love in your life, right? And so do you. So if you're doing things wrong, he'll step in and discipline you. He'll lift you up and clean you off and do that. Now, the second part of what he does, okay, is something that's called pruning. It's cutting back. And while lifting up hurts, pruning hurts too, okay? So we have ow and more ow. And Jesus, here's the thing. Jesus, in this conversation, he's in this meeting with these guys. Hey, it's just the 11. Okay, let me tell you how things are going to work out in the future. Okay, are you ready? Ow, more ow. Wait, what? That's what all in looks like. But the second one, pruning, is talking about, it's not sin so much, it's distractions. It's the unnecessary. Look what the passage itself says. It says, while every branch that does produce fruit, he prunes that one so that there could be more fruit. What is the goal? Let's do the outline again. Fruit, more fruit, much fruit. And how do you get much fruit? You prune it back. Because, again, this is not bad things. This is just not good things. These are, because The natural inclination of a branch, here's what we don't know because we're city people. The natural inclination for a branch is to just run as far as it can and grow a bunch of leaves. And you know why? Because that's easier. It is easier to just run the strands and grow a bunch of leaves. Growing fruit is hard. So they don't want to grow grapes. And so the vine dresser is constantly trimming it back. So no leaves. I know that looks good, but it doesn't taste good. If the vine dresser doesn't bring it all way back, then it might produce some fruit, some grapes, but they'll be small and they'll be sour. This vine dresser doesn't like sour love. He doesn't like bitter patience, okay? You might have had some of that. He says, no, we got some more pruning to do. And so the vine dresser is committed to fruit and more fruit and much fruit, and he wants it sweet and good. And so our preoccupations and our priorities, if you followed the Lord for a while, you might have noticed that what you could kind of dabble in 10 years ago, not appropriate anymore. It's like this, discipline has to do with sin, one writer put it this way, and pruning has to do with self. It's getting rid of that stuff that's not really you if we were back in the garden or in the future in heaven. And some of that stuff you like about you. They're leaves. They don't taste good. Have you ever had a wine that's made out of leaves? I think maybe we should all do that once. And then we'd know what God thinks of our leaf production. When I was doing some research on this, I looked up some websites, from some universities on horticulture in Washington State wrote this. This is really good. It's not really good if it's talking about us, but it's funny nonetheless. It says, standing in front of a mass tangle of a grapevine and wondering what to do with the very scary experience for the novice or even the more experienced pruner, keep these two essentials in mind. Okay? If you're new to vine growing, keep these two essentials in mind. One, don't be afraid to cut. When you finish, 90% of last year's growth will be cut back. What if that was talking about me? God comes down there and with his shears, he goes, huh. And then these guys from Washington State say, hey, don't be afraid, God. When you're finished, 90% is going to be gone anyway. Ow. Part two, the other thing, grape plants are vigorous and forgiving. Even if you make a mistake, it'll fix itself next year. With that said, you can approach your pruning with a spirit of learning, adventure, and not to panic. Hey, that's my soul you're talking about, Washington State University. 90% will be pruned away. Don't you worry about a thing. They're robust and forgiving. They'll bounce back. Maybe that's exactly the way God does his pruning. Maybe there is so much of us to carve back that it's okay if he gets a little sloppy, but he doesn't. Jesus is stopping on his way to the Mount of Olives, to that garden that we know so much about, where he weeps blood. And he stops there and he talks to his guys and he says, guys, listen to me. Listen to me. The Father is out to produce in you fruit, more fruit, much fruit. And he'll discipline you, but he'll prune you. And when he prunes you, he'll prune you way back. And so, listen, when hard times come, and you don't have like red lights going off in your life about things that you're doing wrong, it's still a painful existence because that's what all in looks like. Fruit, how's it go? More fruit, much fruit. And so let me just show you some pictures, okay? This is you and me. This is proud and full of answers. This is after the pruning. Ow! Humbled, broken, but joy-filled. This is what it looks like afterwards, rather. This is broken and joy-filled. That's the same branch, but now it's all filled, and there'll be fruit there soon. This is us, again, all important, and impatient and dedicated to comfort. And this is us waiting on the Lord. 90% trim back. It's forgiving and resilient. This is us now patient and completely detached from the world. We have ourselves needing to be noticed, and then there's a time of pruning where we are ignored and forgotten, and then there's a time in our life where we are looking forward to being forgotten. That's what it looks like. Those are dramatic cutbacks, aren't they? God wants us to see that in our lives so that we won't be surprised when he's disciplining us because of the things that we're doing wrong, or just pruning us from the things that are not necessary. So that's what God does, just in summary. Jesus is the vine. The Father is the vine dresser. You and I, we're the branches. What's the goal? Fruit. More fruit. Much fruit. And how does the vine dresser get that out of us? He disciplines us and he prunes us. That's on the test. And why does he do that? Why does he do that? Because it is to the glory of the Father that we produce much fruit and prove that we are his. That's why. It looks good on him, and it looks very good on us. What do? I ran out of time, so that'll be next week. That's actually the key to the passage. Let me tell you why this is very important for you to remember. This is very important for you to remember. In January of 2009, I was in an especially bad place in my life. I was on a fairly steep decline, and I couldn't find a way to stop. I was increasing in speed. And in the midst of all of that, it kept getting better because Job sent one of his comforters to come and talk to me, if you know what a comforter is, from Job. And he met with me one afternoon and said, "You know, Matt, and his ambition was to compare me to other pastors around the country that were, you know, different places on different journeys. But, of course, they were right, and I was wrong." And so he said, "You know, you don't seem to have any spiritual dynamic in your life." And I said, "Well, you know, how's that? I didn't know you knew me all that well." And he said, "Well, because you know a person's spiritual life by their passion. And you think too much and try to analyze too much." And when he said that, I literally was in my head laughing, thinking of my dad, because my dad never said I thought too much. He mostly said, "Think, Matt, think." And so now this guy says I think too much. And so I said, "Well, how do you know if someone has a lot of passion, since that's the way you know if someone's spiritual life is well?" And he said, "Well, when was the last time you cried because of what the Lord had done in your life?" And I said, "What?" And he said, "When was the last time that you cried because of the work the Lord had done in your life?" And I said, I can't give you that answer. And I let him go because I couldn't give him that answer. He knew way too much about way too many things to ever learn anything else. You know what I mean? He'd hit the rim of his knowledge. Here's the answer. In January 2009, the last time I had cried because of what the Lord had done for me was when I was sitting on the trunk of my car in my driveway. And I was looking out, you know, on my block and my neighbors and thinking about the people I pray for a lot. And I just thought, God, these people, we've been here so long and we've had some influence, but no, you know, the conversations don't happen. And it would be so great if they had a walk with God and they had hope that comes from surrendering their lives to Jesus Christ. And I was a little bit taken back. And then I had this, like, a voice in my head that went like this. What if the guy a block over that you pray for, what if he came over right now? What would you say to him, honestly? Right now, January 2009, I'd say this. I'd say, "You know what, Biff? Your life looks pretty good to me. It looks uninterrupted. It looks like things are calm. And if you were to follow Christ all in, he would wreck that. Because he's wrecked mine." And I started crying because I guess I'd never said it out loud or thought it in my head. You know, maybe I've thought it before, but I kind of thought God was the cool dad, you know, that would take me and my friends to a movie that we shouldn't see because we were too young. And it turns out, you know, the father's the good father, the good dad that takes us to the woodshed for going to see that movie that we shouldn't see because we're not ready for it. And at that time in my life, I was just so tired of a God who never tires from fall prunings, you know? I would never wear this God down, you know? And I was so hurt from a God who hurts. And I was, what really brought me to tears that day on the hood of that car, or the trunk of the car, was that I was embarrassed about being embarrassed about God. Because I if someone came to me that day, I wouldn't tell them about Jesus. Because he's all about fruit. More fruit. Much fruit. And boy, I tell you what, his shears, they never get rusty. You know, he's always using them. And what was really funny, in a kind of melancholy kind of way, is I kind of sat on that moment for a while, because it takes me a while to figure things out, and then weeks went by, and then this one particular person that I keep running to at sports events, he reminded me so much of myself, and I just kept looking at him, and I would look at him all the time, and just, you know, the game's all over here, and I'm staring at this guy over here for most of the game, and I couldn't figure out why this guy was, like, it wasn't bugging me, but intrigued me. And then the Lord brought back to me this passage, John 15. He said, Matt, that's you without pruning, man. That's you, all leaves, no fruit. That's you stuck at 21 or something, and it's still all about you. That's what it looks like when I don't prune and I don't discipline. You're just full of foliage. That's good for nothing. It's just splash. It's a shallow pond. You can't even ski on it. That's what you could be if I left you alone. You want fruit. You want more fruit, and you want much fruit. And I'm going to help you with that. You see, John 15 was written so that you and I, when we're on the trunk of our cars and we're wondering, is God working for me or against me? We can know that on that night in that garden, he wanted us to remember that he loves us. And he loves us so much that he'll spank us and he'll prune us. And we will be so grateful. We will be so grateful to not be left alone. That's all in. That's what it looks like. Oh, I wonder what it tastes like. Lord, I would ask that somehow you would help us remember this exceptionally important lesson about what you're up to and your goals and your means of gaining those goals. So that if we are finding ourselves just running head against you, that when we hear warnings or we get our time out or we're bent over getting our spankings, we would repent and move on to living for you. We wouldn't be mistaken on that. And God, and there's so many people at this church that are just living for you, and they can't figure out why they can't hold their heads up. God, I pray that they know that pruning's happening and the spring is going to come, and there's going to be fruit. There's going to be more fruit. There's going to be much fruit. And they will be sweet on your table. Oh, dear God, let us enjoy that process, that we might please you that much fruit is for the glory of the Father and to show that we are followers of yours. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.
For more information about Grace, visit our website at grace360.org.